KSDP, 830 AM in Sandpoint, K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove, KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay, KFPS, 88.1 FM in Falls Pass, and KKQA, 88.1 FM in Accutan, Alaska.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Acclaimed Indigenous chef Sean Sherman is expanding his nonprofit to Montana. Yellowstone Public Radio's Ruth Eddy has more about his plans in Bozeman.
So we've got ground elk, onions, delicata squash. We just chopped it up real fine. It's got sumac, cedar, and salt in it.
Chef Rob Ganin with the nonprofit Indigenous Food Lab is grilling at the kitchen of Fork and Spoon in Bozeman. The social enterprise restaurant run by the Human Resources Development Council serves pay-what-you-can meals 5 nights a week, but also rents out its commercial kitchen.
There's no stress, obviously. You're not yelling at each other.
Tonight, the kitchen is being used for a pop-up dinner as a taste of what's to come in Bozeman, as Sean Sherman's nonprofit starts using the kitchen regularly sometime in the near future.
Our goal is to try and get food access to tribal communities all across the state, and that's what we're hoping to do right here in this building.
Sherman's restaurant in Minneapolis was named James Beard's Best Restaurant in America in 2022. Awamni highlights indigenous ingredients by removing colonial ingredients like dairy, wheat, flour, cane sugar, beef, pork, and chicken. Tonight's seven-course pop-up does the same.
Put a lot of artistry into the plating, you know, and just really take a lot of care with the ingredients that we're playing with.
The elk skewer is plated on top of a dark red circle of sauce made from currants, topped with fresh ramps and drizzled with a pine syrup, Sherman explains.
We harvested this pine, cut it all up, and then we're going to cook it down with some maple syrup and some water and just let it simmer for a long time till the water starts to evaporate, but it'll absorb a lot of this pine flavor.
Megan Vincent was one of about 80 guests at the pop-up. She's a culinary arts teacher at a high school in Lewistown. She said the food was amazing and the braised bison and wild rice flan were favorites. Already planning on how to recreate it in her classroom.
I really want the dessert recipe to see if I can make that with them, because I think the idea of making a dessert taste that good without using those standard ingredients of sugar and dairy would be a really great experience.
In Bozeman, I'm Ruth Eddy.
The next season of the PBS Kids show Molly of Denali will be the last for the foreseeable future. The team behind the award-winning show will stop working on new content. The show is widely celebrated in Alaska because it features an Alaska Native lead character and showcases Alaska Native culture. This comes as the Trump administration is cracking down on federal funding. But Alaska State Writer Laureate Vera Starbird, who's a writer and story editor for the show, says that's not the full story. While she and other writers knew the decision was in the works before the presidential election last year, she says they did not get the official announcement until recently, and says she does not think there's just one reason for the decision.
What I don't want is for a show this great and this exceptional to be put into this very polarized political lens of it's X person that did it. It's this X action that did it. It's actually a lot of sort of typically television reasons. I do think funding atmosphere that has been tough for a while, political atmospheres, those all for sure contribute to the much bigger reasons.
This is not the end for the show, though. Another season will air, but PBS is not commissioning another season. Molly of Denali premiered in 2019 and was the first nationally distributed children's program to feature Indigenous main characters. The show won its first Emmy Award earlier this year for an episode written by Juneau resident Hune Lance Twitchell. He and Starbird were among several Alaska Native writers who contributed to the show during its run. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support by AARP. AARP creates and connects people to unique tools and programs, helps conserve personal resources, and tackles issues that matter most to individuals, families, and communities. More at aarp.org.
Skugdash. For more than 40 years, Ramona Farms has revived ancient traditional foods. Tepary beans, pinoli, polentas, and more, all from store.ramonafarms.com. Ramona Farms supports this show. Om Nyeh.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Network.
When you look at the bill, we had a saying, because I've been working this for 8 years, make it easy to vote and hard to cheat.
An elections reform bill is just one piece of legislation to watch in the final week of the legislative session. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, May 15th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, the FBI warns Alaskans to be wary of potential online scams.
If somebody is pressuring you to do this quickly or telling you not to tell anybody else about it, those are a huge red flag.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Don't wait 24 hours to report a missing person. As soon as you suspect someone is missing, call your local law enforcement or 911 to make a report. Be ready to provide as much descriptive information as possible to help locate your friend, family member, or loved one. Your reporting can make all the difference, and maybe even save a life. Learn more about Alaska's Village Public Safety Officers at vpso.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Village Public Safety Officer Program.
State lawmakers have less than a week left in the 121-day legislative session. The Alaska Constitution gives them until midnight next Wednesday, May 21st, to finish up their work for this year. Things are moving quickly, and it's tough to keep up. Here to tell us what you need to know is Alaska Public Media's Eric Stone. So, Eric, what do lawmakers have left in this final week?
Well, Casey, there is a lot going on right now. Obviously, this year, as is the case every year, one of the big things to watch is the state budget. The House and Senate each approved their own versions of the budget. Now there is a conference committee meeting every day or so to iron out the differences between the two budgets. And, you know, Casey, it's kind of a strange thing to watch. So, like, actually, all of the negotiation takes place behind closed doors. So what you see in public is a carefully choreographed process. It sounds a little something like this. This is an exchange between House Budget Head Andy Josephson and Senate Top Budgeter Lyman Hoffman.
I move that the committee adopt the following items in the executive branch-wide appropriations. Items 1 and 2, both items Senate.
Is there any objection to that? Hearing none, that motion is adopted and passes.
So that was a pretty big moment. Did you catch that?
You know, actually, no, I didn't.
Okay, so that was the moment that the committee removed a very contentious item from the budget, $78 million, so-called unallocated cut. It would have essentially been the legislature saying, hey, Governor, find $78 million to cut. You decide how to do it, which, if you remember government class from high school, that's a bit unusual, might be unconstitutional, since the legislature is, you know, nominally the branch that's supposed to have the power of the purse. Members of the House spent hours debating it, but just like that, in 17 seconds, at least, you know, 17 seconds that we got to see in public, it's out of the budget. And there is, you know, a lot more where that came from. The Senate's budget is considerably more austere for the most part than the House's. The thing to watch here are the high-profile cuts the Senate made to things like the Department of Corrections and child care. And, of course, the PFD. The Senate's is $1,000. The House's is $1,400. I would suspect that with oil prices low, we'll have something closer to the Senate's figure. But, you know, we probably won't find out the final number for a few days. They tend to leave the real contentious stuff until the very end.
Gotcha. Yeah. We'll definitely stay tuned to what's going on with the budget, considering all that. What else is going on?
So another big thing to watch here is a bill that would modify the state's election system. It passed the Senate on Monday and is in hearings in the House right now. There's a substantial chance it winds up passing both houses and heading to the governor before next Wednesday, but it is hard to say at this point.
Well, what sorts of changes would it make?
Okay, so there is a long list. Here's a summary from the sponsor of Senate Bill 64, Anchorage Democratic Senator Bill Willikowski.
Cleans up our voter rolls, it makes our elections more secure, it makes a number of changes to ensure that voters predominantly in military and rural districts are not disenfranchised, and it speeds up ballot counting.
Okay, so a couple big things to highlight there. It would remove the witness signature requirement for absentee ballots. That's a big reason why ballots get rejected. The bill would also allow election officials to start processing absentee ballots sooner. You also heard Wilkowski there talking about cleaning up voter rolls and making elections more secure. There would be a bunch of new processes to keep track of when people move out of state, plus a new type of post-election audit to make sure the results are correct. It would also notably prohibit AI deepfakes in campaigns unless there is a disclosure that, you know, the image is AI generated. Wilkowski says the bill looks to strike a balance between bills favored by conservatives and others from moderates and Democrats.
Right. Well, I mean, that's his perspective as the sponsor. How's it going over with other lawmakers, though?
Well, so it passed the Senate basically along caucus lines with the all-Republican minority opposing it. Republicans in the House are signaling opposition as well. Conservatives are saying the bill doesn't go far enough on election security. They object to a few different parts of it. Here's Senate Minority Leader Mike Schauer. He's a Republican from Wasilla.
When you look at the bill, we had a saying, because I've been working this for 8 years, make it easy to vote and hard to cheat. And ultimately, where this bill kind of landed on was opening up access with very little security.
He says Republicans were disappointed with changes to so-called special needs ballots, some of the absentee voting changes. And he says, you know, Republicans also wanted to limit the use of ballot drop boxes.
Well, that's all a lot. But what else are you keeping your eye on?
Well, there is, of course, the education bill. Lawmakers passed a $700 boost to basic per-student funding, along with some reforms a little while ago. That bill is pending on Governor Mike Dunleavy's desk. Now, of course, he told superintendents last week that he plans to veto that bill unless legislators pass more of his priorities, and there is no reason at this point to think that they will. The deadline for him to veto it is Monday, and I suspect we'll have a veto override vote shortly after that. Of course, Dunleavy can still veto school funding from the budget bill, and he's indicated he might do that, and that is a much harder veto to override. Of course, there is, you know, a lot more to keep an eye on here in the last week of the session, but I think you have some other stories to get to tonight, so I think I'll leave it there.
Okay, that was Alaska Public Media state government reporter Eric Stone. Eric, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
The Alaska Department of Education and Early Development is considering whether to reduce the amount of money local governments can give to school districts. But as KTOO's Jamie Deep reports, a new bill in front of state lawmakers would allow local governments to continue to fund school districts as they have been.
The money local governments spend on their school districts falls in an interesting spot in the maelstrom of Alaska education funding. Under state law, municipalities are limited in how much money they can give school districts annually. It's called a local contribution. In Juneau, the local contribution makes up close to half of the school district's operating budget. Municipalities can also fund specific non-instructional services outside of the operating budget, and that doesn't count towards the limit or cap.
We're talking about things like extracurricular sports and activities, community schools programs, after-school programs, student nutrition, student transportation, and pre-K and early education programs.
That's Juneau School District Superintendent Frank Hauser at a recent House Education Committee meeting. He says districts like his stand to lose millions of dollars in local funding if a proposed regulation change from the Department of Education and Early Development, or DEED, goes through. It would further limit the money local governments can give to school districts. Representative Andy Story, a Juneau Democrat, introduced a bill that would allow local funding for those non-instructional services to continue as it has, outside of the local contribution limit. A letter from DEED says the state needs to crack down on local spending because it doesn't want to lose access to millions of federal dollars called federal impact aid. The state gets to put that money towards its obligation to schools. The money counts towards its contribution as long as the state can prove that it's funding education equitably between districts. State officials are worried that the federal government may start looking more closely at the local money that goes beyond the limit when it's deciding if things are equitable. The federal government hasn't done that yet, but the state's gone after the Juneau School District over local contributions in the past. DEED Commissioner Dina Bishop says her agency is trying to make the change before anything happens.
The initiative to pursue regulatory clarification is solely on DEED, driven by our obligation to ensure compliance with federal law and Alaska law, which includes impact data as a critical component of the state's school funding framework.
Alaska receives the federal aid to make up for money lost from land that can't be taxed, like Alaska Native-owned land or military land. That's the money the state can use toward funding districts if it's fair by federal standards. There's more than $80 million at stake this year. The bill that Representative Story proposed would make it state law that local funding for the services don't count when the state calculates local contributions to school districts. Time is running out for the bill to become law this year, but lawmakers could take it up again next year. But Story says districts have a lot to lose if DEET approves a regulation change between sessions.
My hope with this bill is, again, drawing awareness to the issues, trying to make sure we have clear definitions. Obviously, hoping it moves along the process, and I think it will be a very much a loss to services and educational opportunities to children across the state if the regulation goes into effect.
Juneau Superintendent Hauser said in an April interview with KTOO that school districts will have difficult decisions to make if DEET's regulation change goes through.
Are we going to provide extracurricular activities, or are we going to have another two or three teachers in the classroom or reduce the class sizes? So those are the decisions that boards have to make, how to make up for those funds that really are for non-instructional purposes.
An administrative order from Governor Mike Dunleavy froze any new state regulations coming forward. But Bishop says the department will request for an exemption with an aim to put the regulation up for public comment at the July State Board of Education meeting. If approved, it would go into effect next summer. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jamie Deep.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the Little Norway Festival is in full swing in Petersburg.
My great-great-grandma came down here from Norway. We've been here for six generations, but it's just part of my culture.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
If domestic violence has touched your life, know that you are not alone. You have the power to break free and build a future filled with love and respect. There's hope and help waiting for you. For free and confidential support, visit notaloneak.org to speak to someone who's trained to help. Every Alaskan deserves to feel safe. This message sponsored by the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault.
Following a request by the federal government, the state of Alaska has turned over the personal information of roughly 70,000 Alaskans enrolled in the federally funded Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, according to the Alaska Beacon. As first reported by NPR, the federal government normally collects information to determine a SNAP applicant's financial eligibility for the program, which is commonly known as food stamps. The new request goes beyond that, though, to cover name, date of birth, address, contact information, social security number, citizenship status, and information about people living in a recipient's household. It affects nearly 1 in 10 Alaska residents who participate in the program. In a May 6th memo, the USDA said it was requesting the information because of an executive order by President Donald Trump. The Department of Government Efficiency, part of the executive branch under Trump, has used that order to combine personal data collected from several agencies to help the federal government track and arrest immigrants they want to remove from the country. The Alaska legislature has previously expressed concerns about the federal collection of Alaskans' personal data, but has not addressed the SNAP data sharing arrangement. In 2017, lawmakers said they did not trust federal government data collection and requested additional privacy protections. Among those lawmakers was then Republican State Senator, now Governor, Mike Dunleavy. Nearly half of all online crime reported by Alaskans last year involved cryptocurrency, according to a new report from the FBI. Rebecca Day, the special agent in charge of the FBI's Anchorage office, says that's important because money stolen as cryptocurrency is much harder to recover.
Once you send that cryptocurrency to the other person, that is immediate. And then what we see is those fraudsters immediately take that transaction and move it overseas where law enforcement cannot get to it. However, if you utilize a traditional banking transaction, typically that has a day or two of processing.
The FBI's latest internet crime report says Alaskans lost over $26 million to online crimes last year. That's down from almost $32 million in 2023, despite nationwide losses to scammers rising over the same period. The three largest types of online fraud Alaskans saw last year were investment scams, compromised business emails, and fraudulent offers of technical support. Day says scammers will send unsolicited messages, offer deals that are too good to be true, and urge you to act fast.
Please look for those red flags. It's really important to take a beat and stop and think about what you're doing before you make these transactions. If somebody is pressuring you to do this quickly or telling you not to tell anybody else about it, those are huge red flags, and that's a good time to stop.
Day says it's important to discuss online scams before they happen because prevention is key. You can find links to report online crimes to the FBI as well as resources to avoid scams in the online version of this story at alaskapublic.org. On the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta, researchers from the University of Alaska Fairbanks have worked with Alaska Native villages to build suicide prevention programs focused on community strengths rather than just mitigating risks. As Brandon Capolo reports for KYUK, the approach has shown such promise it's now being piloted in the U.S. military.
I'm scanning right now. I'm looking for him if he's there.
The U.S. Army's 11th Airborne Division, based between Anchorage and Fairbanks, is considered to be the nation's specialist in Arctic warfare. Joe Gaskin is a senior leader in the 1st Brigade, which is housed at Fort Wainwright.
If you go to the lower 48 across units, you'll hear nothing but negative about Alaska. Everybody's killing themselves everywhere. Oh, it's terrible. It's cold. It's dark. It's this, it's that. So I did have some trepidation coming here.
For those who aren't adapted to the cold climate, military service in Alaska can be uniquely challenging.
And you get in here and you see, well, guess what? It's not that bad. We just got to do a little something different.
In 2021, the year before Gaskin's arrival, the 11th Airborne had 17 suicide deaths, giving it one of the highest rates among military units nationwide.
I think about it every day. Every time my phone rings, I have heart palpitations. You get a phone call in the middle of the night, I'm like, my God, we're devastated every time these things happen.
The following year, Congress directed then Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin to investigate the military's approaches to suicide prevention. New leadership came into the 11th Airborne, and Senator Lisa Murkowski secured funds through Congress to try and address the problem. This laid the groundwork for a partnership with the University of Alaska Fairbanks, located just down the road from Fort Wainwright, to try and replicate the successes of their community-based prevention model in Alaska Native villages on the state's military installations.
And all they were doing was taking them back to doing hard things, subsistence living, and all those things that provide purpose to the Native community. Well, those same things apply in our formation.
The team from UAF brought retired officers on to help develop a new program tailor-made for the military's culture. They invested in building the division's identity around its Arctic environment through activities like polar plunges. In a video provided by the U.S. Army, junior officers motivate their soldiers to jump fully clothed through a hole in the ice into the freezing cold water. The goal of these activities is to help soldiers connect with their peers and leaders and to build a sense of shared purpose.
Why did I come in the Army? What is my purpose? Is being part of the 11th Airborne Division, does that make me special in some way? And when people can hitch their wagon to that, all those negatives start to melt away.
During another community outing last year, soldiers learned to make smoked salmon.
I have a question. If anybody does not feel like shit, that's okay. Why did y'all join the Army?
I wanted to become a stronger person, mentally.
Sergeant Major Gaskin says he thinks the efforts to deepen connection within the division are making a difference.
I lose sleep every night thinking about these kids that, you know, we've lost along the way. And I think about each and every one of them. I think about their parents, their families. I don't know what I would do if it happened to me. I'm tearing up, you know, thinking about it. We got to protect what's left.
UAF Center for Alaska Native Health Research has already expanded their study to include other military branches, like the Coast Guard and the National Guard. This dovetails with a national shift towards suicide prevention approaches that try to build up a community's protective qualities, which are starting to get a lot more attention in the field. In the latest National Suicide Prevention Strategy, put out last April by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services,
community-based suicide prevention is strategy number one.
Holly Wilcox is a national suicide prevention researcher and a professor at Johns Hopkins University. She says the federal government's emphasis on community prevention feels like the signal of a new paradigm.
I actually think it's been long overdue. We really need to be focusing more upstream, community-based, on a public health approach to this major and leading cause of death.
Wilcox wants to see more groups around the country seize the opportunity to deliver programs that follow this approach. With the increased attention and funding from the federal government, she's feeling more hopeful that they might. In Hooper Bay, I'm Brandon Capullo.
This story is part of a series from KYUK focused on community-based suicide prevention. Find the rest of the series at kyuk.org. Support for this reporting was provided by Stanford University's Bill Lane Center for the American West. And if you or someone you know may be considering suicide or is in crisis, call or text 988 to reach the Suicide and Crisis Lifeline.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, proud of its ties to Alaska communities since 1977. Learn more at alyeskapipeline.com. Alaska Pacific University empowers students to make a positive difference in their communities through programs in education, business, outdoor studies, public health, and more. Scholarship and other financial aid opportunities are available. Learn more and apply now at alaskapacific.edu to automatically be considered for most scholarships. Advance your career and your community with APU today. This message sponsored by Alaska Pacific University.
A statewide advisory board tasked with managing Alaska's forests met last week on the Kenai Peninsula for the first time in about 20 years. The group talked about conservation and projects during a short hike that followed a string of presentations. KDLL's Hunter Morrison reports.
Mitch Michaud is a retired federal forester with the National Resource Conservation Service. On a recent sunny afternoon, he leads a small group of people on a short hike near the Kenai River.
Okay, let's stop right here. Let's look at the tree that's right in front of us.
He points to a tree blooming with green leaves that shimmer in the sunshine. But the tree, a bird cherry, is invasive to Alaska, and Michaud has asked the city to cut it down. He says it could be a detriment to the nearby river because the tree attracts insects that impede salmon habitat. The stop is one of several on the Alaska Community Forest Council's agenda from last week. That's an advisory board made of foresters from across Alaska that provides guidance to the state's Division of Forestry. The group meets quarterly, but hasn't met on the Kenai Peninsula in about two decades.
This walk is to showcase the projects that are being done in South Central Alaska and on the Kenai Peninsula.
The walk highlighted several stream bank stabilization projects in the area. One was a multi-agency project implemented last summer, where timber was anchored, laid out, and covered in mulch to prevent further degradation of a heavily used fishing area at Centennial Park in Soldotna. Native vegetation was also planted and has since taken root.
We know the Kenai River is death by a thousand cuts.
That's Kevin Duffy, Trout Unlimited Alaska's Kenai Peninsula Community Engagement Coordinator. He says healthy stream banks support healthy salmon habitat.
So any way you can erase one of those cuts, then we're building towards a better future.
A major topic of conversation during last week's forestry meeting was spruce bark beetle mitigation. The area around the Centennial Park campground has been hit particularly hard by the insects over the last few years. But forestry concerns like these aren't just local to the Kenai Peninsula. Elise Huggins is a forester with the council who came down from Anchorage. She says these issues have spread to other parts of Alaska.
The more you learn about one aspect or multiple aspects of the same problem, you're not repeating the same mistakes, right?
Huggins says the walk was informative to help find ways to mitigate forestry issues in her neck of the woods.
And you're hearing how other people have made mistakes, which you don't want to go through, or how other people have had successes. So it's saving dollars, saving public resources.
Michaud, who led the walk, says it's one thing to talk about forestry projects. but he says seeing them in person can be an educational experience.
We always have a tour, and here at the Centennial Park Campground, you can see a lot of different things, and you can do it all like on a loop, and it gives the chance for everybody to have some side discussions and as we're going.
Last week's meeting wasn't just a walk around the park. Representatives from the city of Soldotna also sought guidance from the group about the city's tree ordinance and proposed landscaping projects. In Soldotna, I'm Hunter Morrison.
Celebrations are already underway in Alaska's Little Norway. Every year, hundreds of people flock to Petersburg for the Southeast Island town's iconic Little Norway Festival. And there's a lot to experience throughout the week. KFSK's Olivia Rose has more.
May 17th is Norway's Constitution Day, and in Alaska's Little Norway, it's a big deal. Every year around this time, Petersburg holds a week-long festival to celebrate its Norwegian heritage.
If you actually do go to Norway for their festival, it is one day. Ours is many more.
Brandy Tinez is a volunteer on the festival's committee and one of the adults in charge of the Young Norwegian Dancers program. The celebrations date back to the late 1950s. Some traditions have grown and morphed over the decades, mixing with new ones as well. But the Norwegian dancers have always been a fixture.
Dancing and bunads are all part of what you would see if you were in Norway, actually, during their suttemais, but it's the 17th of May.
Dozens of kids hold hands and run around in circles inside the Sons of Norway Hall. They're practicing traditional dance routines to perform for the Little Norway Festival.
It's chaos. It's kids, yeah, lots of kids in bunads.
Bunads are traditional Norwegian clothes, mostly blue and red trousers, vests, dresses, and skirts embroidered with symbolic flowers. Describing the dancing in a choice word or two, the kids say it's
really fun.
Pretty fun.
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 Chaotic, definitely.
Seventh grader Anya Curtis rejoined Norwegian dance last year, but not just because it's fun socializing with kids from all over the island.
I've been doing Norwegian dance because my great-great-grandma came down here from Norway, and we've been here for six generations. But it's just part of my culture, so I really like doing it, and I enjoy like being around people that like the same interests as me, and dance is how I kind of express that, so.
There's a whole bunch of other games on tap. Drag comp or tug of war, the Jormungandr sled pull. Oh, and the fish holding contest returns this year too. When it debuted last year, droves of folks attempted to hold up the large dead fish, the longest, for a cash prize. But in the midst of flying fish or cornhole sacks, don't forget to stop and take a look around.
Just be on the lookout for our festive Vikings and Valkyries, wearing all their furs and their horns, carrying their steins. They always add a magical touch to our festivities.
That's Chamber of Commerce Director Kelly Slavin. She's been working with the Committee of Volunteers to organize this year's festival.
I love seeing all the people in town. I love seeing the tourists and the visitors coming in and just the excitement on everybody's faces.
The events keep going through the weekend with baking classes, art shows, shrimp feeds, beer gardens, competitions, and a parade when the Viking ship Valhalla sets sail through downtown. And it all wraps up on Sunday with a seafood bake on Sandy Beach, closing out a week of celebrating Petersburg's Norwegian heritage with its Alaskan community. In Alaska's Little Norway, I'm Olivia Rose.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Eric Stone and Jamie Deep in Juneau, Chris Clinton, Anchorage, Brandon Capillo in Hooper Bay, Hunter Morrison in Soldotna, and Olivia Rose in Alaska's Little Norway, that's in Petersburg. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde, Tim Rocky's our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Matson, delivering the essentials for everyday life in the last frontier. Learn more at matson.com/Alaska.
Start your day with a quick look at the most important stories from around the state with Alaska Morning News, your dose of headlines each weekday morning on your local public radio station.
This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.
So long that I've waited for a girl to come into my life and in my world. I can't explain my feelings for you. I guess you're just all my dreams come true. And I'll be your lover. That I've been blessed, 'cause I've got you by my side. And I'll be your lover.
From a gun or some brain that weighs a ton. My God, it hurts to get
I would switch, but I wanna be the same. And I know I'll find a reason, cause I always bust a rhyme, because it takes a nearly all my time. G stands for treason, but D stands for death. And maybe I just used to, maybe I'm just used to, maybe I'm just used to much.
I like that, y'all. 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 I like dirty bath. Sound cuts like glass. Gotta, gotta keep it high. Power to the mass. Yo, Taj, another life platinum here. All the people all around the same path. Kaboom! Guess who stepped in the room? The cab hailing from the shelling out. It be me, the killer bee, on the MIC with the SS double double U to the B. Downtown. Let me see, is we all in together now? Make it move better now. Listen, I ain't sweating no competition. Low, going mad low like I'm fishing.
Another chapter from the Wu-Tang book. Take a look and repeat. Killer bees never sleep. Non-stop, put you on the chopping block. Unorthodox, attitude the melting pot.
I'll do anything, I'm so into you. Right here, I'm weak downtown with the weird. Kaboom, guess who stepped in the room? The SS double double.
We'll be right back.
It's like the dream I have each night. I try to run, my feet hold tight. So dig my hands into the ground, call your name.
Just you and me. Don't sell out, bow out. Remember how this used to be. I just want you closer. Is that all right? Baby, let's get closer.